ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
AFL Daily for your Tuesday on the heels of round five of the AFL Premiership season. Gather round's done. Every team's played five games. Gives a proper look at the ladder and gives us a chance to pull apart all the footy shows on a Monday night, which set the agenda for the week ahead in the footy landscape. My name's Corbin Middlemass, as always, the All-Australian captain, the man who was the captain of the Bulldogs during their drought-breaking Premiership year. He's also the favourite son of the West. His name is Bob Murphy. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Corbin. That was a very lovely intro. And don't get me wrong, I really appreciate it. But if we're going to be here every Tuesday for the rest of the year, I reckon we'll tighten that up. Just a Footscray heartthrob, and then we'll get straight into the footy.
I'll see how many I can work through. I'll see if I can get rarer and rarer as the season goes on. We'll start with the.
It's good to see you anyway.
Straight up and down stuff. How's your weekend? So we're all off in Adelaide. I understand you took the opportunity to get away on the weekend as well.
Well, I had a gather round. Yes. It wasn't in South Australia though. It was with some family friends and went camping in Euroa on school holidays and went up there, got the caravan, set it all up myself and did all those sorts of things, I just love to do all that sort of stuff, tinkering away. But it was nice just to kind of watch footy in the front bar of the local pub and soak in some of the atmosphere. Most of it good.
I heard you were an Uber camper type operator. just called the camper van in and away we went. How do you go camping? Are you much, man? I know you're a country lad originally.
I love everything about camping, except when it comes to the setting up of the equipment. It's not a strong suit. So the packing up, setting up and packing up, the bookends of the trip, find it quite a bit of a strain. But the stuff in the middle, good for the soul.
Yep. We love big and broad. And on the back of Gather Round, we got everything. We got player versus umpire. We have all sorts of things involving father sons and draft hands and what that looks like going forward. The role of the ruckman in modern footy, all of that on the agenda. The fixture. Feels like every week we got a fixture story.
Oh, yeah.
We got one again today, so don't worry about that.
Excellent.
The biggest story in footy is clearly what's going on with Zach Butters and Nick Foote. So Butters has been referred straight to the tribunal for abuse towards an umpire. So this obviously played out in the final game of Gather Round back on a Sunday night. It's been an interesting turn of events to get here. So abusive and insulting language towards an umpire. Zach Butters spoke after the game. Nick Foote didn't speak to Zach Butters. And then basically he's alleged that what was said was, how much are they paying you? So the Foote side is essentially alleging to Butters that that's what Butters said. Butters is disputing that and essentially saying he didn't say anything along those lines. Before I get your take, Ray Chamberlain joined us on AFL Monday last night right here on ABC Sport. And this is what Ray had to say about the allegation.
From my perspective, having sat in that chair for 20 years, there's nothing worse outside of vilification that you could say to a match day official. And umpires are not allowed to go back. I would get in so much trouble, even just for standing my ground and saying, don't talk to me like that. And I'd cop it from the AFL umpiring department for, saying too much and, have a thicker skin or, go through official channels or what have you. So the umpires aren't in a position where they're able to say anything back. And that's probably, I think, a really great thing for the game. And so as a result, I don't think it's right. And I'm not suggesting Zach did say this. Again, it has to be proven yet, right? But more broadly, calling an umpire a cheat or making that inference is as poor a thing as you can say to an umpire.
So Butters did say in his interview with Xander Maguire on field that he said, how's that a free kick? So that was his version of events, and Ollie Wines was in supposedly in ear distance at the time. But what's your rate on it all?
It's really interesting insight from Ray Chamberlain there of that any sort of inference to any sort of level of corruption for an umpire is at the real top end of what could be offensive. So that explains to me how the reaction could be so swift if you thought you heard that. Now, Zach Butters hasn't given his evidence yet. That after-the-game interview kind of muddies the waters a little bit. So where I've landed on it, without having heard the tribunal's evidence, I would put forward that they're both probably right. That I think the umpire legitimately thought he heard how much you're getting paid for that. And I can quite easily imagine Zach Butters, because if you paraphrase his post-match interview, it could be, what did you pay that for? And in the heat of the battle, the noise around, both of those things can be true. They said one, and then it's misconstrued in that. Mm-hmm. Now, look, I know players who have sworn black and blue that they have done or said certain things on the field, and then the evidence is wildly to the contrary. Like, you are in a different headspace. But listening to Zach Butters after the game, like, that denial and his pleading of innocence, to me, felt absolutely sincere and genuine.
I said the same thing as you last night. So it's
now that is as subjective as it gets, but that's what we do as observers.
It's like the children's game of telephone, you know, where you all sit in the corner and essentially you whisper around the
you
room.
Said that. Yep.
And there's a chance that, like, I'm with you, both versions of events could absolutely be true here. That he's... Zach didn't say it, and yet that's what Nick heard. And I think how they get out of that in a tribunal setting is an interesting way. Like, does the tribunal have to find one guilty and one not guilty, or can they essentially use it almost more as a reconciliation point?
This could be viewed as a very, very naive statement. Is there an avenue for this to have gone to mediation before it went to the tribunal, or is that what the tribunal is? So if that's off the table, when it gets to the tribunal, is there a soft call? If the umpire said this, now there's no audio apparently. I mean, the audio's inconclusive. That seems to be the general view.
Yep.
So that may not play a huge part in it. If it's the umpire said and then the player said, well, that's not what I remember saying.
Yep. I think that would have been a better forum for it. Interestingly, there's lots of former players that are so strong on this. And I get it that no one cheers for the umpire. So it's not as if there's going to be a chorus of people coming out supporting the umpire's version of events, just on complete face value. So a lot of the empathy will be, I think, with the player. And you can already see that in the way, you know, social media is lit up. But a lot of former players are saying, oh, you know, it's Butters' reputation that's being questioned here, and this will stay with him and all the rest of it.
It's a 50-50 ball.
But is it really going to stay with either guy? In 3 weeks' time or whatever, if they're running around, are we going to go, I used to cheer for Butters, but after what he said to the umpire, I don't know if I'm going to be on supportive of him or whatever. Like, I don't think it really kills either guy's integrity, does it?
I like to be a contrarian on this show, Gordon, just to give bang for buck, to make a splash. That's what you told me at the start of the year. You need you to make a splash, mate. I actually think that the game will be the winner out of this. It's like they've... The umpire has made a statement. Do not question the integrity and what we get paid. You know, that sort of phrasing, unacceptable. That's a really harsh thing to be accused of, and Ray Chamberlain supports that. And I think Zach Butters, if he didn't say it, well, then he's quite within his rights to go, that's okay, but I didn't do it.
He did say on the field, he said, how's that a free kick, was his quote. I hope he doesn't go there tonight and start saying, oh, I said, you know, I used the word pay and
that's what I think he will.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you think, well, maybe the interview, Zach, was a bad idea, that as much as, you know, he was sort of getting on the front foot saying it was great that I spoke and everything else.
I actually think it was a bad idea.
So now his two stories aren't going to match up, and you think that's a bad jumping off point.
No, because he's not giving that post-match interview as a legal deposition. Now, I know that sounds way over the top. But if he's already been told he's reported at that point, he has opened himself up a little bit there.
No doubt. And so now
if he had said after the game, I said, what did you pay that for?
Yep, it would have looked
right. I think we would be at mediation.
Yep, absolutely. And so
I hope that's where we end up. I hope the tribunal can be malleable enough to get to that point of you heard that, so you feel like you said that.
The other part is obviously the fact that Nick Foot is employed by Sportsbet, and this has been circulating online, as you can imagine, as a backstory. And there's lots of internet detectives out there saying, "Oh, would you believe this?" Which the AFL and a lot of people in footy have known for a long period of time. It's not a secret. He's on a public facing platform. I think he does a podcast and talking about the racing industry. But the AFL would hate this, wouldn't they? Like, in terms of, yes, he's got to have a day job and he's got to go about and do what he does, but even just the fact that it's getting the attention that it is.
Oh, they would hate it. And there's been awful headlines in recent years about the Brownlow and the betting and those sort of things. So it gets lumped into that bonfire of an unfortunate story.
And I guess we spoke about this a bit last night. You know, the alternative is, well, the AFL can always, you know, buy out his contract and essentially say, hey, we'll have you as a full-time umpire or whatever it turns out to be if they don't like it happening. So otherwise, I don't know what you do. He's a part-time employee. You know, Sportsbet are also a sponsor of the AFL. He's over here working in a different industry. I can understand how he's holding the two jobs concurrently, even though it makes a lot of people uncomfortable. Nick Riewoldt was on the agenda setters last night on Channel 7, and I was interested in whether this is analogous or not to what happened with the Lance Collard case. Of course, Collard has been found guilty, or at least the charge has been upheld, of making a homophobic slur on field, despite the fact there was no recording of it. It was two witnesses versus one. He's got a hearing coming up later in the week to decide what the penalty is ultimately going to be, and Collard is obviously in the same, I guess, similar to Zach Butters here.
Similar, but not the same.
Said that he didn't say it. This is what Nick Riewoldt had to say on 7 last night.
It goes to the tribunal now. So we had a precedent from the AFL last week with the Lance Collard situation, where there were two witnesses, so majority rules against one witness.
Which we'll talk about later in the show.
Yeah, and the AFL took the side of majority rules with no evidence, no audio. You would assume that that's what they're going to do here. They're going to take the side of Wines and Butters because majority rules. Is that how this is going to unfold?
Come on, Nick.
Well, is that the precedent?
I don't think they are going to make... I think what they will do is they'll just accept that someone's got it wrong. And I don't think they will find Zach Butters. And Zach Butters seems prepared to take this all the way.
So that was the agenda setters last night. I guess if it was a court of law, for example, and you had two witnesses versus one, and then the guy that was accused also has priors for saying the same thing.
That would be the other part of it, wouldn't it?
Which was interestingly omitted. It's not as if, you know, Butters in this instance has a previous, you know, set of cases for making abusive comments to umpires, which was omitted from that grab.
Yeah, I think... Whilst there are similarities, I would think there's enough difference there to separate the two cases. I think the priors for Collard clearly it went against him.
Yeah, it's almost implied that there's, you know, some kind of more, you know, work going on behind the scenes or whatever it turns out to be. At least that's the sort of the feigning ignorance that I got from that particular comment. But I would actually argue that Nick's quite right, that if there were three people around Zach Butters and they essentially said, no, I absolutely agree with what Zach said, I think that would help Zach's case.
Again, this is where the football environment and just being in public is different. You know, again, let's go with the tram stop analogy. If there's three people at the tram stop, that probably carries more weight than three teammates generally will probably fall into...
No doubt.
All into line.
Also, when you think about, you know, the parties that are involved here in the two particular cases, like, what are the two Frankston players have to gain here?
Yeah, that's...
So what is actually in it for them to be able to be put in this position? Like, they have no incentive to lie here.
No.
And then the same in Nick Foote's case. So, like, what is Nick Foote's incentive? Like, does he want his whole, you know, employment with Sportsbet blown up and this whole storm and everything surrounding him? Like, he didn't...
Yeah, and I wanted to get involved in a game and a big story and a headline and...
What does he want that for?
No.
Whereas the incentive actually, and again, yeah, that's why you let these things play out and you wait for all the evidence to come along and stuff. Like, clearly we know the incentive for the player that's accused. They want to avoid a suspension and keep playing. You know, that's very straightforward. So, and that doesn't necessarily, you know, mean that, hey, because the allegations have been laid, they absolutely should be upheld and so on and so forth. But I sometimes sort of scratch my head where I think, hang on, what's actually... What do people think is the motivating aspect for some of these people to be involved in things that I'm sure they would rather just continuing on their business in their daily lives than being involved in these storms?
It's a shame we don't have better audio, isn't it? Yeah. It's a real shame.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems bizarre to me.
Yeah. It is odd. It is
odd. I know it's an unusual environment to have record, but you hear some things as clear as a bell and then... Yeah. Others muffled and then other stuff missing. Could have cleared it up pretty easily.
The Collard case discussed further on the back of Caro's call, her usual segment on the back of her monologue, talking about what's next for Lance Collard and what's next for the game when it comes to dealing with homophobia.
Every expert who's given evidence in this case says suspending alone is not going to create a better environment for footballers. The AFL 2.5 years ago sat down with a PA and agreed they would deliver set penalties. Why did Collard get 6 weeks the first time when I think Isaac Rankin argued his down to 4 weeks late last year. Now what we've done is that, and that they also agreed to create a new framework around trying to make a more inclusive game for everyone, something that the new chairman, Craig Drummond, talked about all weekend over Gather Round. This Friday, for the first time, they've finally got a group together, 2.5 years after pledging to do it when they made the last CBA. You know, Paul Marsh, when he ran the PA, asked for some sort of consistency.
Structure.
There's no consistency, and it only seems to be getting worse, and the cases seem to be mounting up.
So Caroline Wilson there saying that finally this committee will be getting together with a bunch of current players, former players, administrators at AFL House to essentially try and thrash out this framework, which the AFL Players Association have been leaning on heavily as these cases have sort of bobbed up over the last 18 to 24 months.
I'm not against a uniform structure for whatever the week's penalty are. But the way I look at it, I think is slightly different of, okay, it's 4 weeks, it's 6 weeks, it's five. I would say the real penalty is in the reputation of the player who's found guilty of those slurs. And it is heavy. So Isaac Rankin gets 4 weeks. The penalty within the court of public opinion is tenfold to that. It's significant. And he's doing a lot of work to make his way back, and that's commendable and all those sort of things. But that's a heavy penalty to play. The thing that I would, if I'm hearing Caro right, the thing that I would challenge around that is that things aren't getting better and that this environment isn't safe. Now, it's not an absolute, but I would think that in recent times, the playing field and the level of care and the level of standards has risen so sharply in regards to the languages. Now, I understand whenever we hear one of the reports, it's a real knife to the ribs. It hurts the soul for a lot of people, myself included. I don't want to speak on anyone else's behalf, but I think over the long arc of time, it has become much safer, much more front of mind for players. I think that the idea of the loose, casual use of certain language is now gone. Now that there will be mistakes, and there will be not just mistakes. There may be even a few bad apples that choose to overtly use it. But I think en masse, I think we've come so far for the better, and I wouldn't want that to be lost in the whole discussion.
Yeah. It's interesting where a lot of people quote the numbers in recent years. So they'll say, hey, there's been 9 cases or whatever it turns out to be since the last 3 years, 2024 onwards or whatever it turns out to be. I guarantee you it didn't go from 0 to 9 in this period. So basically what's changed in that period is that this administration is doing something about it.
That's exactly it.
And previous administrations did nothing about it. So I find it really hard to sit here and be critical of the current administration because at least they're starting to do something. It's not as if we never had one incidence of homophobia and then all of a sudden we've had them from 2024 onwards.
I'm pretty sure that I would have played in a generation where this wouldn't have even been thought of as
a suspension or
a suspension
ban
or ban or something would have been considered part of the game.
So I
think that's a bit selective. It's out of control. It's like no, this is a code trying to get control, and I think it is.
And the only other thing I want to call out, I know the Players Association, they've been telling everyone that will listen about this framework and everything else and stuff. Like, does the Players Association really need the AFL as the teacher in the room to come in and hold their hand and set up a framework, and if they get set penalties, it'll fix up homophobia in the game? This starts and ends with the playing group, doesn't it? And I feel like we're always empathetic to the players, and there's lots of former players in the media and everything else, but ultimately, if the players don't clean it up and they don't hold each other accountable, and when they're walking around at training or they're in the locker room, if they don't call out their mates when they say it, then ultimately there's always going to be an element of it in the dressing room. This language is not being used in Andrew Dillon's office, in AFL House, in the front office at footy clubs. And so if it is still happening in the locker room, the only people that really can police that are the players themselves. And so for the Players Association to put it back on the AFL and say, oh, yeah, we've had all these cases, but we've been asking the AFL to come to the table and create a framework and everything else, I'm not buying that.
One of the great regrets of my time in footy is if I could go back to when I was lucky enough to be captain of the Bulldogs, I would have made it more explicit I would have loved to have my time again and stand up in front of the group and stand with Ali Blackburn and Luke Beveridge and the AFLW coach and just in front of the entire playing group and staff say, this is not on. We don't stand for this. If anyone here is gay, bisexual, whatever their sexuality is, they are welcome here. And the language to the contrary is not welcome. And if you don't want to buy in, you're out. I would love for captains and coaches to just stand up. And maybe they are. I would love to. I think that would be a shortcut. No, just to knock it on the head.
Yep. And they have the chance to do that.
But if you don't, why?
Correct. Yep. No, I'm with you.
But I didn't do it. You know, I was just, because you assume.
It's also 10 years ago.
Yeah, but you also assume that people know what you're about and you're on board and you're an ally. And it's like, experience tells me now you actually have to be explicit.
To AFL 360 last night, Coach's Night, Dean Cox was along, the senior coach of the Sydney Swans, and he was asked about the upcoming fixture. So round six sees two games played on a Friday night, which means the Sydney Derby is under the Friday night lights, but it's got competition from another game being played down at the Cattery.
Oh, Jared, I find it quite strange, to be honest. I think, you know, if you're trying to build traction, and the battles that we've had with GWS have been unbelievable over the past, you know, ever since the inception, but certainly probably the past 8 to 10 years. And to clash against two Melbourne, you know, great Melbourne clubs is just different. You know, we want to try and build as much traction as we possibly can and get the Sydney football world having their eyes on two teams going at it from across the bridge. And yeah, it's something that is a little bit different, and we'll speak to the AFL about.
Yeah, so you are worthy of the national exposure. This is a game that has held its own for years on end now.
Yeah, you're exactly right. No, I think also as well that, you know, if you do a double header, you know, have a Perth game following it, obviously with a time difference, I think that's probably the only way you do it. Most other sports don't compete for the same market on a Friday night.
Ah, we love a fixture conversation. Every week there feels like there's some kind of holes in the fixture. We've lived through the first few weeks with buys all over the place and opening round and everything else. Big deal, no big deal, the doubleheader on the Friday night.
I feel like you've set me up here, Corbin. I feel like you've set me up because you started this show and you alluded to the fact that, you know, my caravan site was set up for me, that I didn't do it. So think about that bloke, the cartoon character that you accurately painted me as. So when it comes to the fixture, I look at the fixture and go, how do they get it pretty good?
Yeah.
So I'm amazed that they can even sort of put it together in a fashion that's pretty good. This does seem like a bit of an own goal, though. It just seems like a mistake to have an overlap.
So I think it's something like, I did actually write this down here, but it's something like, here we go, round 6, 8, 9, 10 and 11. So over the next few weeks, we have double headers on 5 of the next, like, 7 weeks.
And how many of those, if I can ask you, how many of those have a WA element involved? Not many.
Not many? Yep.
So wouldn't that be the logical
solution? It'd be good to take advantage of the time zone.
Yeah, that's what I would have thought.
Do you know, you've lived in Perth and been there recently. Yeah. People would love it because instead of scrambling to get to the footy at 6 o'clock on a Friday night
totally.
Or whatever, it gives them a chance to get
there. It would shock me every time when I was in WA. Finishing up at work and then go, oh, I might watch the... It's halfway through the second quarter.
I was the other way. As someone that grew up in Perth and came over here, I'm like, gee, the footy starts late.
Oh,
it's so late in the
so
day.
Late. Like, so late. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's an odd one. It just seems like a bit of an error.
What I think the main reason for it is, and I'm sure the AFL, that there's so many things they've got to put into it. If we want Thursday night footy, there's only so many 5-day breaks that teams can play off.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, you need to shoehorn more teams on a Friday night because then at least they have 6 days going into the following Thursday. It gives you more options for the next Thursday night fixture. Because this is part of the problem. We want Thursday nights, but then teams don't want to play off really short breaks or they only want to do it a couple of times a year. And then if everyone rotates through Thursday night like they do in American football, then essentially we sit back in round 7 and go, oh, how come North Melbourne's on a Thursday night? I don't want to watch this game. I want to watch the feature game of the week. And you think, well, you can't have everything. Like that. At a certain point, if you want really big blockbuster games on Thursday and Friday night, you have to accept that every now and then there's going to be two games on a Friday night to deal with short breaks and everything else.
We dissect every week on its merit here, and we do it with vigour. You and I, Corbin, that's been said. That's it. That's not us saying it. It's a lot of people out there saying it.
Yes.
The masses. Can we keep an eye on whether the five-day break actually is such a concern for clubs, or it is just something they don't want to do, but they actually can do it perfectly fine.
Right. So you think it's...
I'm not as convinced that...
Yeah. How would you go playing offshore, bro?
I didn't mind it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I didn't mind it.
Okay.
It was more of an uncontested type.
But I think essentially that's it. Because if you only have one Thursday night and one Friday night, you've only got four teams in that rotation that can play Thursday the next week, unless someone's coming off a five-day break.
Yeah.
And they're only able to do that a couple of times.
I feel like clubs will always complain about having to...
Always.
Always.
Yep.
But I'm not totally convinced.
Mm.
So it's such a big issue.
It's like the WA teams. Like I'm very empathetic to WA as a native sandgroper and everything else, but they always complain about the fixture because they've got to travel and it's longer distance and everything else. And I understand it as someone that's sat on planes for a long time over the Nullarbor. And then you suggest, why don't they, we need 20 teams. Why don't they put the new team in Perth, for example? It'll give you two more games in WA. You won't have to travel. And no, we don't need that. It's not that much of a disadvantage that we don't want to share the market with a third
it's
team.
It's a problem up to that point.
But no further. So they're happy enough just to have the town to themselves. All right, where are we going next? Footy Classified. Spoke about the potential. So we're very broad today from fixtures to all of a sudden talking about father sons. Mm-hmm. And obviously this is a hot button issue at the moment about the potential changes to the draft bidding.
Yeah, well, they took and seized the opportunity of having all the AFL heavies in their town on the weekend, whereby their own chairman, David Koch, and Chief Executive Officer Matthew Richardson made sure they got well and truly in front of the AFL Commission Chairman Craig Drummond and also the AFL CEO Andrew Dillon and others from both parties to have a last-ditch bid to have the AFL delay the mooted changes to the national draft, which would ultimately see them have to pay a whole lot more draft currency for upcoming father-son players. And this is in light of the access that both Brisbane Lions particularly and Gold Coast Suns and other clubs have had extremely successful access at very, very low draft currency.
So the shorthand to all this is that you're going to have to pay a higher price for academy picks and for father sons. They want to bring the changes in as soon as this season. The problem for that is that the knock-on effect means the teams that are going to be disadvantaged the most in the short term are Carlton, Essendon, and Port Adelaide. So essentially three teams that are towards the bottom of the table. So those clubs are saying, hey, can we grandfather this deal in and kick it in, maybe when after Tasmania have come into the competition and those drafts are compromised anyway. And at least we've got a little bit of a run-up that we can start building some draft capital as opposed to just going, right, it's in right now. And I know there's always going to be some team disadvantage, but at this particular stage, it's going to be teams that have, two of the three that have been miserable for 20 years.
Hmm. If you thought the fixture and the camping was a problem, when we start getting into draft points, I actually don't mind on what you've just told me there and what we just listened to. I don't mind that delay from Tassie. I actually, in my heart of hearts, think that seems to be reasonable.
Yeah. It's going to be so impacted anyway, that draft, with all the kids going down to Tasmania, that it just... Once we come out of it, let's get it back to as clean as we can possibly do it.
Yeah, and this, look, my answer may be coming from a place of guilt because you didn't mention the Western Bulldogs there have done pretty well from the father-son for a number of years. And the significance of the father-son rule, there's a lot of romance to it. Gee, it's played a big part in shaping the fortunes of some teams. So I am actually not against it on what you've just sort of laid out there. That
you're as much of a footy romantic as anyone. Surely you want to still see the father-son in some shape.
I do. I really like it, but I also would support tightening it or, constantly looking at it just in terms of, the romance and the value and how outweighed it can be for certain clubs.
And I think the changes are going to be good, that you need a match with two picks as opposed to with, seven, and you can use a bunch of fourth rounders to build your draft points. So if you only...
Yeah, so who's benefited the most? Probably the Bulldogs, Brisbane, Collingwood?
Yep.
Well, right at this moment, they're probably not going to be the ones in the next few years.
They've won three of the last four premierships.
Yeah, so that in the next little bit, if the benefit went to, those clubs you mentioned...
Yep.
Turn a blind eye, maybe, until Tassie gets in.
Yeah, yep. And they need to do something about it because it's... Carlton and Essendon and, big draws for the competition, and yet they've, they both look like they're down in the doldrums at the moment, and yet they've,
Yeah. I just want to go on record that the Bulldogs will not be giving up any of their current father sons under any sort of changes to this rule.
Speaking of the Bulldogs, nice
segue.
On the couch, the greatest player of all time, Lee Matthews, last night had this to say about Sam Darcy.
It amazes me that Sam Darcy, who's 209 centimetres, you're getting absolutely slaughtered in the ruck. But Sam must be too fragile to play ruck.
Is that it? Do you think he's too fragile?
Otherwise, you're just getting destroyed in the ruck, and you've got a 209 centimetre player. He's only a young man. I know. He's only 22. But they mustn't think he's fragile enough, because they needed that extreme height. Ned Reeves is showing the guys, and Mason Cox might play this week for Frio. The 210 centimetre player who can really reach up is likely to get hit out to advantage, better to movement. So you're getting these unpressured clearances.
Is he too fragile?
Well, I thought you were leading us in there. The greatest player of all time was Sam Darcy, and then you said Lee Matthews, and it got a bit discombobulated there. Can I take on Lee Matthews? Never done that before in my life.
Sure.
First time for everything.
It's going to be the headline of the show. Bob Murphy takes
I'm
down.
Sure, I'm sure he'll be shaking in his boots, Lee Matthews. So Sam Darcy is not fragile in the least. Okay, he might be the toughest player at the Western Bulldogs. It's not that. Mm-hmm. Something that I would put forward, and there's a fair bit of evidence over a long time. Luke Beveridge, to me, he's more than a coach. He's more of a belief system. Luke Beveridge. So I as a Bulldogs supporter, former player, I'm like, I just believe in what you're doing, Luke. That's where I'm at. You know, I kneel and bow and, okay, whatever we have to do. It's a belief system. But he's a ruckist. And what I mean by that is that the football establishment and Lee is the apex predator. He is the godfather of the AFL fraternity. And so he does represent the orthodox use of ruckman. And Luke Beveridge does not adhere to that. I almost think that if this argument gets louder to put Sam in the ruck, we're probably less likely to see him in the ruck. But one thing I can say for certain is it's not because Sam's fragile. In fact, the way Sam plays as a forward, I would say is more risk to his health than him playing in the ruck.
Is this like the Aaron Norton thing all over again?
It might be.
He should go to centre-half back anyone in the team will play centre-half back before Aaron Norton at the moment.
You can go all the way back to... I remember playing with... I don't know what happened with the ruck, but Kobe Stevens was in the ruck at one point. Luke, he likes to get creative with that position.
Yeah.
So with Tim English out, I think the chances of seeing Sam are pretty slim.
I'm going to need you for this one to get your ladder out, because we've seen every team now through five games. And what we're essentially trying to do is establish our early season hierarchy. So people feel like we've split them into three different categories. We've got the teams that are contending to win the flag. We've got the teams in the middle that are fighting for a wildcard spot. And then we've got teams down the bottom that we're already putting a line through. So as you start to sort of put them into your different categories, let's have a listen to Gary Lyon talk about the Sydney Swans last night and what they're doing early in the new season on AFL 360 on Fox Footy.
They're the number one offence in the competition and they're the number one defence in the competition. Yeah. It's not a bad place to be after five rounds of footy. When you think about the beautiful premiership window that hasn't lied for the best part of 21 years, they are in A, they're in seat 1A, these boys, after five games. Again, early day, and they've got, you know, arguably the best player in the comp, you know, or the most informed player in the comp, Isaac Heaney. So, number one offence, number one defence, Heaney's flying, they improve from within, McInerney gets better. No. Coxie... He won't have much. Well, he might have something to whinge about when he joins us, but not from a playing point of view.
So I've got seven are contending. I've got six in the middle and five that I've put a line through.
Okay. Did Gary put Sydney as a number one contender before the season started? Because I know a bloke who did.
And you're pretty comfortable with that? If you don't toot your own horn, there's no music, as they say. So we're happy with that.
So you've got seven, have you?
I got seven. So I've got the current top six.
Yeah, so have I. Yeah.
Plus Geelong.
So okay, I don't. I don't have Geelong.
Wow. Okay. No. Then in the middle bracket,
I've
got... Actually, let's put a line through the teams.
Yeah.
So down the bottom, take out Richmond, Essendon, Carlton, West Coast, and Port Adelaide.
Mm-hmm.
So even though Port's 10th at the moment, I don't think they're going to be there. So
no, either do I.
So I've got the bottom, and then I've got every other team in the mix, in the six in the middle there. So that leaves me with North Melbourne, Melbourne, maybe I'm generous to the Kangaroos, Adelaide, GWS, Collingwood and St Kilda fighting for a wild card.
Yeah. We're actually pretty close there. So you've got Geelong in that top bracket.
Yeah, I got them contending.
If we were just to for alignment,
yep.
I would have Adelaide as a sleeper there.
Okay.
They could still make a run, I think.
Yep. And are you shaken at all by the Dogs?
No.
No?
No, no, no.
So English comes back, all's good in the world?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm not shaken. No.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm stirred.
Yes. Good hit out.
That was fun. That was good.
Very broad today.
It was. Try and keep it
as broad as we can.
I love Tuesdays.
Yeah, good. Appreciate your insights as always, Bob.
Always, mate.
I'll chat to you next week.